You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
I'm wearing a life vest or a life jacket. Is there a difference? Like, does anybody know? Is this a vest or a jacket? I mean, if I wear a tie with a vest, okay, good call. Good call. So I wanted to tell you a couple of stories about some times, some adventures that I had on some boats. I have been on boats many times, I guess, and cruise ships, and I guess ships and boats are different. But when we were in college, Kendra and I were in a singing group, and there was 10 of us that toured the East Coast for 2 months over the summer. We got paid for it, and one of the things that we got to experience on these, we had concerts Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, and then two concerts. We usually had a Sunday morning and a Sunday evening because we went to different churches and sang. And Mondays were our day off. And one particular time, I think we were in Virginia. Was it Virginia? Maryland? All right, so somewhere south of the Mason-Dixon. Huh? Chesapeake? No, it wasn't. Okay. Somewhere around the Chesapeake. Perhaps on the Chesapeake, perhaps not. We had the opportunity, one of the places we stayed at a host family. Sorry, this is way too long of a story, but you know me. We stayed with a host family, and they happened to have a house on a body of water, possibly the Chesapeake. They had jet skis that we could use and some different things. It was a very nice house on this lake. And one of the owners or people that were lived there was actually a professional race boater or boat racer. I'm not sure what you call it. And he drove one of these things they call the cigarette boats. Do not smoke. Smoking is bad for your health. But cigarette boats were what they would call them. And they looked something like this, is what the boat looked like. And we had the opportunity to ride in this boat with the guy as he raced it through this undisclosed body of water. And it was an amazing experience, like something that, of course, most people never have the chance to do. And it was just fast. It was so fast. Like everything, we didn't wear helmets, but we had certainly life vests on. And everything was just blowing at you. You definitely didn't open your mouth because something could fly in there. Perhaps a Chesapeake-related bug or some other body of water. But anyway, something would fly there. I remember Kendra, we were talking about this the other day, and she said, you know, you couldn't even keep your eyes open. Like, you had to decide, are your eyes open or closed? Because your eyelids would go one way or the other. Like, it was like open all the way or down. And it was just super, super fast. And it was incredible. And we were young in college, and we didn't think at all about how the fact, you know, this is probably really dangerous. Like, there's all these other people on the water. But it was an amazing, amazing experience that we got to be a part of this. And this guy professionally raced this boat, and it was fast. You can't really tell, but I guess you can. Like, it mostly wasn't in the water. You were like at an angle like this. You were in the air more than you were in the water, which is pretty incredible as well. It was pretty crazy. Now, another boat that I have been on, and probably many of you perhaps have been on, was this boat here. This is the tour boat at Penn's Cave. Penn's Cave up in that way. What's it called? Center Hall, yeah, the Center Hall area. That's definitely in Pennsylvania. I can confirm that. Possibly the Chesapeake, but probably not. but of course, if you haven't been there, these boats are handmade because they're made to fit in the cave. And you probably have seen the billboards if you haven't been there. The cave is flooded, and that's the only way that you visit and tour the cave is by boat. And they're made specifically because there's a particular spot where it's a very narrow passageway, and you actually have to lean in the boat. Everybody has to lean to the middle so that it can fit through that spot. If you're into claustrophobia, that's the thing for you. And what's kind of freaky about these boats is that you're really low in the water. like the water level, you know, you're not flying, you're going very slow. But the water level, like you're most of your body is under the water level as the boat sits there. And of course, the whole purpose of this boat is to take your time and floating through and touring all the different unique things. I believe this is called the Statue of Liberty. That's what they call this particular rock formation. And as you go along on this, you know, I was just looking at the website the other day, and I forget how long the tour is. But it takes you through the different things. And they point out the stalagmites and the stalactites. And stalactites are the ones that hang down from the top. Stalactite with a T, and stalagmites come up from the bottom. Just in case you care. And so you take your time going through, and it's fun. The prices have gone up. You know, back in my day, you could get a whole family in there for like $20. Now it's like $22 a person or something like that. But those are both boats that I had the opportunity to ride on. And I'm sure it's apparent to you that they are different. They have different purposes. In a speedboat, the goal of a speedboat is to get ahead of everyone else. That's what a speedboat is all about, a racing boat. The goal of a speedboat or a racing boat is to get ahead of everyone else. You're not interested in what's going on around you. You're interested in where is the other person. And am I ahead of them or not? Am I going beyond where they are or not? That's what the goal is. You're not interested in anything else except where they are and if you're better than them. Now, on a tour boat, of course, it's the opposite. A tour boat is to take your time to look and see everything around you and notice your surroundings and see all the things that are around you. And the issue is that in life, you and I are often like one of these and less like the other one. We are often like a speedboat. Because what we are interested in is making sure that we are doing better than the person next to us. That we are further along than the people around us. That our house is nicer than those people. That our job is better. That our marriage is better. That our money that we've got is better. That I'm doing better in school. That I've got the right clothes. That I'm sitting at the right table in the lunchroom. Because we're looking at the things, the people around us, and comparing ourselves to them. Instead of taking the time, like a tour boat, to see that, wow, you know what? There is so much here that I've missed. There is so much that I already have. And so today we're just going to challenge you in your prime groups this week with that question. Are you more like a speedboat or are you more like a tour boat? Which one is you? And we've been going through this series now for a couple of weeks called The Speech. And in this series, we're looking at this speech that Stephen is giving to the Sanhedrin. We'll come back to that a little bit more and give you a little more background to catch you up. It's kind of been a weird, you know, we met one week, we canceled the next week, video last week, and now I'm back up here. And I've missed it. If you go back to December, this is the second time I've taught in 5 weeks. So it's kind of nice to be back here. But we're looking at the speech that Stephen gave to the Sanhedrin. And in this speech, he's walking us through basically Old Testament history. Not every detail, but covering some big things. Trying to make a comparison to the problems that the Sanhedrin had. They were the religious ruling council, the Jewish religious ruling council. And Stephen was brought before them on trumped up charges. Someone made some accusations, falsified the evidence, and then said, Stephen, you need to stand trial before these people. And then he proceeds to give this speech. And in the speech, he's making jabs throughout the speech to or at the Sanhedrin. At their failures, at their flaws. Because one thing that you need to understand too is that this is the same religious ruling council that brought Jesus on trial and eventually decided to execute him. And so these are the same group of people. Now it rotates a little bit, different leaders, but it's the same body that was involved in that. And so Stephen is kind of taking these jabs and taking shots at them because they are bringing Stephen on trial. As you saw with the intro video, the life of Stephen is very similar to the life of Jesus. At least in some of those highlights. And so they were bringing him on trial just like Jesus was brought on trial. And I want us to see throughout this series, and we're going to continue through next month, that there's a Sanhedrin in us. that deep down inside of us, there's a part of us, because of our sin, because of our selfishness, that acts just like the Sanhedrin did. And so the point for this week that I want us to look at is that the Sanhedrin in us fails to see God's provision. The Sanhedrin in us fails to see God's provision. Because the Sanhedrin in us is more like the speedboat that says, I want to make sure that I'm beyond everyone else, that I'm further along than everyone else, that I'm healthier, better, stronger, richer, whatever, than everyone else. Rather than a tourboat mentality that says, wow, look at all the things that God has done for me right where I am now. And not comparing ourselves to someone else, but looking at God's provision and saying, you know what? Look what I do have. Look what God has done for me. Look at how amazing my life is now. And that's how the Sanhedrin in us kind of rears its ugly head. And again, each week, the question is, you know, how do you see the Sanhedrin in you? Does this look like you? Is there something in you that acts this way? And of course, like I said, every week too, you know, we're not going, well, of course I'm like that. No, and I'm not saying, we know God has provided for us. But when the rubber meets the road, or more particularly, the hole meets the water, we are more interested in getting ahead of other people than we are in seeing what God has provided. So we're going to look at this speech. We're going to continue here. Last week, I set up the video that Craig Rochelle shared about Abraham. That was the beginning of Stephen's speech, where he talked about the life of Abraham and how God made promises to Abraham. And the fact that the Sanhedrin and Stephen were in the land of Israel was the fulfillment of the promise that God made around 2,000 years earlier to Abraham. And Stephen was saying, look, you guys, God keeps his promises. And now he's continuing, going from Abraham, kind of jumping a few of the Isaac and Jacob, into the life of Joseph. And he's telling the Sanhedrin about the life of Joseph here. And that's where we're going to be picking up in Acts 7, verses 9 to 16. So you can listen along. If you have your Bible, we'll go ahead and turn on the house lights here, please. And you can look at your paper Bible or the YouVersion app. Acts chapter 7. I'm in the NIV today. And this is how Stephen continues his speech. He says, because the patriarchs were jealous of Joseph, they sold him as a slave into Egypt. But God was with him and rescued him from all his troubles. He gave Joseph wisdom and enabled him to gain the goodwill of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. So Pharaoh made him ruler over Egypt and all his palace. Then a famine struck all Egypt and Canaan, bringing great suffering, and our ancestors could not find food. When Jacob heard that there was grain in Egypt, he sent our forefathers on their first visit. On their second visit, Joseph told his brothers who he was, and Pharaoh learned about Joseph's family. After this, Joseph sent his father Jacob and his whole family, 75 in all. Sent for his father, there we go, 75 in all. Then Jacob went down to Egypt, where he and our ancestors died. Their bodies were brought back to Shechem and placed in the tomb that Abraham had bought from the sons of Hamor at Shechem for a certain sum of money. So context here, Stephen is sharing the story, and in your prime group we've been adding some for further discussion pieces, and this week you can talk with your prime group leader about how to go further in the story of Joseph. But Joseph is one of the sons of Jacob. Jacob is his dad. And eventually they became the 12 tribes of Israel. Jacob's name was changed to Israel by God, and they became the 12 tribes of Israel. And so Joseph was one of the sons. If you remember the story, perhaps Joseph's dad gave him an amazing technicolor dream coat, or at least that's how Andrew Lloyd Webber looks at it. But his dad gave him a coat of many colors. His dad loved him. He was the one that he wasn't sure if he was going to have a kid, and then Joseph comes along. And so it says that his brothers were jealous of Joseph, and then we'll kind of pick up the story verse by verse here. But that's kind of the context, that Jacob was Joseph's dad. Jacob's dad was Isaac. Isaac's dad was Abraham. So there's the progression. Joseph's great-grandfather was Abraham, if I did that right. But we see some things here about the story. The first thing, and I just want to look at this idea of how there's a speedboat, versus a tourboat. The first thing is that with the speedboat, there's that idea of I'm looking to be ahead of everyone else. And the speedboat side of the story is Joseph's brothers were jealous. That's what we see in the first part of Acts chapter 7, verse 9. It says that because the patriarchs were jealous of Joseph. Next slide there. Because the patriarchs were jealous of Joseph, they sold him as a slave into Egypt. And let me clarify a couple things too. Stephen is speaking about 2,000 years later to these people. They know who the patriarchs are. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. That's kind of the story. Craig Groeschel talked about that last week, that if Abraham hadn't obeyed, maybe he wouldn't be the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He would just be the God of someone else. And so when Stephen is talking about the patriarchs, he means these leaders. He means the founding fathers of the faith, the early ones that kind of began what is Judaism in their time. You'll also see forefathers. And we use the same things too. We talk about the founding fathers. And you're probably not referring to like your dad. You're probably referring to, I don't know, Washington, Jefferson, Ben Franklin, or something like that. And so when he's talking about the patriarchs to the Sanhedrin, they knew who he's talking about. So you're going to see that phrase. I wanted to clarify that. You'll see patriarchs. You'll see forefathers. It's all referring to the same people who were Joseph's relatives. And in this story, those people will be Joseph's brothers. They will also be Joseph's dad. But the point is that Joseph's brothers were jealous of Joseph. They were looking at Joseph, and instead of looking at where they were, and if you read the story, and again, you have a chance, you can go back and do that. It's in the Bible. You're allowed to read the Bible whenever you want. In Genesis, it was around chapter 39, I think, the story begins, and they were the ones that were out doing the thing. Like, Joseph was just a servant boy. And instead of seeing that they were the ones that actually had the jobs and were holding down a steady income and were happy to be out there, Joseph was a servant boy, but they were jealous of him. And so it says that they sold him as a slave into Egypt. And the story is a lot longer than that. Eventually he gets there. And Kendra, during her prayer, was saying, how many of us find ourselves in holes, metaphorically in a hole with no way out? Well, Joseph was literally in a hole with no way out. His brothers put him into an empty cistern, which is a hole in the ground. And they put him in there, and then eventually they sold him in slavery to Egypt. So the brothers made money off of their younger brother. Frowned upon today, definitely frowned upon back then, frowned upon all along. You don't sell your siblings as slaves, okay? You good with that? A lot of multi-sibling families here. Just remember that. That's not good. But they were jealous. They saw what Joseph had and they wanted that and missed all that they had around them. And their only focus was what else they could get. So they sell him into slavery. And the crazy thing is, they thought that's the end of the story. And they went back and told their dad that Joseph was killed by an animal. They told Jacob, their dad, that Joseph was killed by an animal. They dipped his clothes in blood, his fancy robe, and told their dad that. And so that was the speedboat side. From Joseph's brother's perspective, oh, we're not as good as him. They missed what they had around them, sold him into slavery. Meanwhile, there was the tour boat story. There's the tour boat, and that was where God provides for Joseph. And I want you to understand something here. Like, we know the story at this end. We sang a song that I think is so, we worshiped a beautiful song. I've seen you move the mountains, and I believe you'll do it again. Like, we have seen God do things, and so we trust Him. We should trust Him. And here, Joseph is in a hole and is sold into slavery. And Stephen, again, summarizes like what are multiple chapters of Genesis. Stephen summarizes it with just a few verses. In verses, beginning in verse 9, second part of verse 9, he says, "But God was with him and rescued him from all his troubles." And the key word of this, the key focus of this, is the word "with." The Greek word is meta, which I don't know if that was the reason why Facebook renamed themselves, but whatever. But God was with him. And we like to say, oh, okay, everything was good for for Joseph. Look how it all turned out. Look how great it was. But what we miss is that Joseph was imprisoned. He was sold as a slave. He was, like, it was not a good life. But as Joseph looked at it, he saw it as a tour boat. He said, look at all the things that God has done for me. Look at how good it is for me, even though I'm in prison, even though I was wrongfully accused on multiple occasions, even though I was forgotten. And again, you can read the whole story. He was not in a good place as far as good, and we'll come to that later. But God was with him, and therefore it was good. And so he says God was with him, rescued him from all his troubles. He gave Joseph wisdom and enabled him to gain the goodwill of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And that phrase goodwill is the Greek word charis, or grace. And the point was, there was nothing about Joseph that deserved Pharaoh to look upon him fondly, to look at him kindly. It was that God was doing stuff. Joseph didn't deserve it, but God was the one working. And eventually, again, summarizing lots of chapters of Genesis, eventually Pharaoh made him ruler over all Egypt and his palace. Joseph was second in command. And so when we think about all the, oh, life is so hard, and man, I wish I had what they had, and look how good it is for them, and look how happy they are, and look at the nice stuff they've got, or why can't I have the grades like they do, or all these things, where we're busy speedboating going, how am I, just stop. And just take a tour around you. And we've reflected on this stuff before. Like, you guys, you're eating. You've got clothing. Almost all of you have family right around you. Like, what has God done for you? And let's just say for a second, let's say your life is as miserable as Joseph's. And what if all that you've got, the only thing you've got, is Jesus? Is Jesus enough? Can he be your one thing? Because I think a lot of us would say, oh yeah, Jesus is enough, except that I need more. Jesus is enough unless it's not happy for me. Jesus is enough unless this thing isn't going the way I want it to. Which then means Jesus isn't enough. And that's where Joseph was. He was on the tour boat. He was looking around saying, my life was rotten, but God was with me, so it wasn't rotten at all. So then the story continues, and we jump back then to the speedboat perspective. Now, God provided for Joseph. Joseph was second in command. There was a famine coming to the land. Again, you can read all this in Genesis. And God spoke to Joseph in a dream and said, this famine is coming, so start now storing up grain for later. And so Egypt, under Joseph's leadership, stored up 7 years of grain in their granaries. This is where you put grains, or you put old mothers, grandmothers, I don't know. In their granaries, where they put that, where you put them on the roof of the car. Only if they're dead, you put them on the roof of the car. Yeah, you tie the dog to the bumper. So you got me. All right, good. And you probably all knew who Hulk Hogan is, too. So the ones that don't know what we're talking about don't know who Hulk Hogan is either. Anyway, what am I saying? I am saying something about comparing ourselves to the people around us. And Joseph stored up all of these, stored up all the treasure. And we get to this spot where his brothers now are then comparing themselves. And this is legit. Like, I get it. And they were comparing themselves to the people around them. And so they're on the speedboat going, okay, we're starving. And who isn't starving? And what do they have that we don't have? And again, this is a legitimate thing. Like, if you're starving, you're going to say, okay, I want to, you know, provide food for me and my family. And so they realized that Egypt had food stored up, and they were selling it to all the different people around them. They had plenty of food to spare. Now, at this point, Joseph's brothers didn't realize where Joseph was at all. But as the story continues, as Stephen continues in verse 11, he says, then a famine struck all Egypt and Canaan, bringing great suffering. And our ancestors could not find food. Again, there's that ancestors, forefathers, that whole word. They could not find food. When Jacob heard that there was grain in Egypt, he sent our forefathers on their first visit. And the story tells us there were two visits where Joseph's brothers went to visit him. But they heard that there was food in Egypt. So again, looking around saying, okay, what don't we have? What do they have? And again, this is probably legitimate, but their focus was still on what else is there? And then, and this is, so maybe you're in that spot where you have just been missing what God has done around you. And you've been screwing up. God has been doing amazing things. You've botched it because you're so interested in what you don't have and what you want. And you are probably thinking, you know what? Why would God use me? God would be done with me. I know in our prime group this past week, I say our prime group, I'm leading one. It's kind of crazy. We were discussing this idea of God's promises and how we, and I know all of you were, about God's promises. And it came up, sometimes we just don't trust God because, like, if I messed up, why would God come through for me? Why would God come through with His promise? And I think some of us are thinking that right now. Like, I screwed up. I haven't trusted God. And we think, why would He come through? And that's what's so cool about this next part here. So Joseph's brothers were starving. They were looking at the Egypt saying, they've got something that we don't have. And at that point, you and I would be like, ha, 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 suckers. You're going to starve now, aren't you? But then the tour boat comes back in. And God, in His grace, provides for His brothers, for Joseph's brothers, and for the whole family. And that's how the passage wraps up. This part of the speech wraps up. It says, then a famine struck the Egyptians, 4 brothers, first one. On their second visit, Joseph told his brothers who he was. They didn't know who he was at the time. He was pharaohed up, Egypt up, you know, bald head and all the eye makeup and stuff. And Pharaoh learned about Joseph's family. So Pharaoh heard that this is your family? And so as the story goes, Pharaoh said, well, bring them here. Bring all of them. Well, there's like 75 of them. Bring them all. We will care for your family, Joseph. We will take care of them. We will provide for them. And now to Pharaoh, he's thinking, hey, look what I'm doing. I'm a great guy. But Joseph and all of his siblings recognized, look what God is doing. Look how God came through, even though we didn't deserve it. Look how God is providing for us. And so it says, after this, Joseph sent for his father Jacob and his whole family, 75 in all. Then Jacob went down to Egypt, where he and our ancestors died. And I just need to clarify, that's not like, if you're reading this to the Sanhedrin are like, well, of course we know the story. They went to Egypt and lived a long life until Jacob died. Okay, just to clarify that, that wasn't like, he went there, he was like, I'm in Egypt, blah, and died. Like, that, it was, they knew the story. So it wasn't like, that was a good thing that he went to Egypt. It wasn't like he went and sent him there to be poisoned or something. So they went there and died. And it says their bodies were brought back to Shechem and placed in the tomb that Abraham bought from the sons of Hamor to Shechem for a certain amount of money. And that's actually another for further reading in your prime group this week. You can talk to your leaders about finding the journey of Joseph's or of Jacob's bones. Like, they're moving all over the place. It's kind of an interesting little story. But the point was that God provided for Joseph's brothers. God brought them back to the land to the land of Egypt. Which, interestingly enough, is what sets up the next part of Stephen's speech, which we'll talk about in 2 weeks, because next week's this Sunday. But they're in Egypt for 400 years, and in those 400 years, eventually, the leader, the pharaohs, that change hands and change hands and change hands, don't like this giant nation that is now living there, and said, we're going to oppress them, we're going to make them slaves. And that sets up the need for someone to deliver them, perhaps through 10 plagues. But that's for next time, and you know, in 2 weeks from now, you'll forget. None of you know the story of Moses anyway, I'm sure. But this whole idea of speedboat versus tour boat, like, how often are we so interested in what we don't have? And let's be honest, we compare ourselves to others, and whatever that other is, it might be someone you personally know, it might be someone that has created an image in commercial, an image on YouTube, an image in a magazine that says, this is what I need to look like. There's this show on the D Plus network, the other Disney Plus, not Discovery Plus, and it's about the best top 10 of the 80s. And growing up in the 80s, I was interested to see it. It's hosted by Rob Lowe, so what can go wrong? And the last one that I just watched, which was the top 10 commercials of the 1980s. And it was just so interesting. There were some things that were just amazing. Like, Nike started their Just Do It campaign. And before that, they were like a nobody shoe brand. And Apple had a commercial for their brand new Macintosh computer. And it was, they saved all their money and put it, I think it was the 84 Super Bowl. They played it once, this one ad. And if the ad didn't work, Macintosh was going out of business. Apple was going out of business at that moment. And of course, they're not now. If you didn't know that. If you own a device that starts with I, you're good. But the whole point is how often we are sold an image, sold an impression of what you should do, what you should look like, how you should be. And maybe it's someone you personally know. Maybe it's something that's been sold to you by our culture. Maybe it's just your own misgivings, like, oh, I grew up this way, and there's no way I'm going to do that again. Or this situation happened to me, and I will not let that happen again. And so we have all these things that we are constantly comparing ourselves to something. And we're driving that speedboat. Meanwhile, God's like, I've provided so much for you. And even if I hadn't, I am with you. I'm with you. Because the Sanhedrin in us fails to see God's provision. It misses what God has done. We miss the things that are around us, the things that we have. And again, like, you're here, you're watching online. Like, that's a whole other thing. Like, how did that even exist? 2 years ago, we'd be like, that would be crazy. But the fact that you're able to worship God, that you're with a community of believers, that you have the Bible in a language that you can understand. Frankly, you have it in like, I don't know how many languages, or how many English versions of the Bible there are. But there are cultures that don't even have it in their language. And we're like, I might read that thing someday. But we miss that we have God all around us. And I just want to encourage you, it's time to throw on the life jacket and take a tour of your life. Look around you. Look at the things that you have. Look at the God that you have. Before we're like, but I don't have. I just want to say, yes, you do. And if I can be just polite, shut up. Yes, you do. You have so much. But see, here's the problem, and I want to kind of look at what causes us to go. Like, I think in our heads, we're like, well, of course I want to see all the things that God has given me, and of course I know that. But sometimes the Sanhedrin in us is messed up. Sometimes the Sanhedrin in us kind of sees things from the wrong perspective. Sometimes our culture changes the way we see things. Sometimes our own impressions, and again, maybe your history, maybe something that happened to you when you were a kid, maybe something that happened to you when you were an adult, maybe somebody you knew that something happened. I mean, all these things affect us. And I just want to, and I need to apologize because the font here doesn't look great. But I want to look at some things that affect why we miss God's provision, why we end up on the speedboat and not on the tour boat. And the first thing is that the Sanhedrin in us is misled by what seems, and that says good. Misled by what seems good. Because we see good very differently, I suspect. Very differently? Differently than God sees good. Good for us usually means I'm happy. Good for us means I'm having fun. Good for us means I'm healthy. Good for us means I've got enough stuff. That's how we define good. And this thing is bad. Why is it bad? Because I'm not happy. Why is this thing bad? Because it's not fun. And I dare to say that Joseph in that pit, which I should pull back a little bit, and I'll get to this in a second, I guess, but in that pit, God was planning something for 14 years later. When there would be a famine. And he needed to provide for his people. And Joseph was probably in the pit going, this isn't fun. This isn't happy. Nobody likes to be in prison or be a slave. But God said, this is good. Because God was with him. And see, we mess up what is good. We think good is something different. And God's like, no, good is something that's good for you. And let's look at a couple passages here. One is in James chapter 1. James says to us, do not be misled. My dear brothers and sisters, whatever is good and perfect is a gift coming down to us from God, our Father, who created all the lights in the heavens. He never changes or casts a shifting shadow. If it's good, it's from God. And if it's from God, it's good. It has nothing to do with. He doesn't say, don't be deceived, dear brothers and sisters. If you feel good, therefore it's from God. He doesn't say, do not be misled, brothers and sisters. As long as your circumstances are easy and comfortable, therefore, it is good. He says, if it's coming from God, it is good. Because God loves us thoroughly, deeply, unconditionally, in a way that we don't even love ourselves. And yet we look and say, this isn't very good. And God is like, I am good. And I have given you me. So it is very good. Over in 1 Timothy, there's another verse. We actually looked at this back with Ralphie in the Christmas at the Movies series. But Paul's talking to Timothy about the people that are misusing their money and using the church and Jesus to get rich. and to get more and to have more. And he says, Paul says to Timothy, true godliness with contentment is itself great wealth. Another way to put it is, having God and nothing else is very good. It is great wealth. It is great riches. He says, after all, we brought nothing with us when we came into the world. We can't take anything with us when we leave it. So if we have enough food and clothing, let us be content. See, Paul is defining for Timothy, don't mistake what good is. We think good is money and riches and things and stuff and happy. He says, if you've got God and you're content with that, that is great wealth. That is very good. And so how do we define good? How does God define good? God is interested in our eternal benefits, our spiritual benefit. That is how we define good. And so for us to say, oh, I don't have as much as them and things aren't as great as they are and all that, like, this isn't good. Is what you're going through good for your eternal or spiritual benefit? Even if it hurts, even if you're in a pit, even if it sucks, even if it's not comfortable, it can be good if it is from God. No, it is good if it is from God. And we're so busy kind of whining about, I want to be happy, I want things to be easy. And we just take, again, jump on the tour boat and look back over your life. Because you didn't grow when things were easy and good. You grew when things were hard. And as hard as it is as Americans and humans and all that, like, I do not want to just jump into a pit. But we need to have a perspective that good, if it is from God, even if it means jumping into a pit, if it is for our eternal and our spiritual benefit, then we have to redefine good. Because that's what good is. So the Sanhedrin in us is misled by what seems good. We mess it up. And again, how often we hear people talk about what it means to be happy and this, things are good. The second thing is that the Sanhedrin in us misinterprets when is the right, and that says time. Time is a whole nother thing. Because, I mean, the microwave was not around when I was born. And I've shared this story so many times. You guys, if you're old enough to know who Hulk Hogan was, and when the Macintosh computer was released in the 1984 Super Bowl, you remember that a dinner had to sit in the oven. You could get a TV dinner, which was fast because it was already on the metal tray. And then you only had to wait for like an hour and a half for it to cook. And now we've got microwaves. You've got, like, right now, I could ask you a question that is completely difficult, and you could get an answer for me in 5 seconds or less. Because you would pull out your phone and Google it. You might not even pull out your phone. You might just ask, I won't say the names so your phones don't all go crazy. You might ask these different people that names start with and Al and things like that. Because we have everything now. We want it instantly. We want it ready. And so we feel like if something doesn't happen at the right time, it must be bad. If it doesn't happen on our time schedule, it must be wrong. And not just that, and we talked about this in our prime group a little bit, but we want the whole story. Like, we don't want to know, well, what's going to happen this week. We want to know, how is this plan going to work out for the rest of my life? We want to know, if I do this, what is going to happen down there? And we want it now. And we need it right away. And I just want to share a couple passages here. One of them you are so familiar with. And even if you weren't familiar with it before you came in this morning, you are now, thanks to Professor Stevenson. And that's in Matthew chapter 6, verse 11. Jesus, this is the Lord's Prayer. What does Jesus say? He says, give us... What is the words here? Well, you can read the screen. He says, give us today, our daily... Okay, he does not pray, God, give me a feast that will get me set up for the next 8 years. He doesn't say, God, show me exactly what's going to happen, how I'm going to be provided for. I'm not looking... He says, God, give me a meal plan. Can I have the tickets at least, the coupons that I can tear off and redeem over the next 5 years? His prayer is for God to give us today our daily bread. And so all we are guaranteed, I think is a legitimate way to say it, is tomorrow, is today, this moment. And our obedience also doesn't have to be, well, God, I'll do this if I know what the end is. No. Obey today. And look at God's timing, and God says, okay, I'm going to give you enough for today. Well, but what about what? No. Do you have enough for today? Then be quiet. But what about the news? Today, our daily bread. Paul says over in 2 Corinthians, something that we're going to see this theme a lot more in a few minutes. He says, and God is able to bless you abundantly. Abundantly. And that's the word bless that we talked about during the blessing series last summer. Doesn't mean we're happy. It means God is active in our lives. So that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. Paul just said, you all the time will always have all that you need through God. Now, you're thinking, well, there is that time where I didn't have all that I need. No, you didn't have all that you thought you needed. But God is able to bless you abundantly in all things, at all times, having all that you need. And we look at time, we're like, but I want this for down there. No. Your job is right now. Do you have what you need right now? You're not on a tour boat with binoculars trying to see what's way down the road. The moment right now, look around you. Do you have what you need? The answer is yes, because God has provided it for you. But again, we want things to fit our timing. We want them to fit our plan. God, here is my plan. Here is my schedule. I'm going to lay it out for you. And don't even look at me and say, oh, that's easy for you to say. No. I love to have a plan. I am way beyond Hannibal. I love it when a plan comes together. That's an A-Team reference, which also would be tied into Hulk Hogan, who I think was actually on the A-Team at one point. But anyway. But the idea of having a plan, like, God, this is what I want this to look like. And honestly, I get bothered when my schedule doesn't fit the way I want it to. But I shouldn't be, because I need to say, okay, God, what I have right now is what I need right now. And if I'm in the bottom of a pit, then I'm going to have what I need in the bottom of this pit. And if I'm leading a country with granaries full of resources, I still have all that I need. Because God is with me. Like, it's all of those times. And we just need to trust God's timing. All we need to focus on is this moment. Giving us today our daily bread. Don't worry about tomorrow. Jesus even said that. Tomorrow has enough trouble of its own. Don't worry about that. Worry about today. So, we're misled. The Sanhedrin is misled by what seems good, misinterprets when is the right time. And finally, the Sanhedrin in us misunderstands what we need. And again, I mean, all these are very similar. How do we define need? Oh, I need that new thing. I need that. And that's just not true. There is one thing, and I feel like we sang about this, whatever. Like, there's one thing that we need. Can you just look up here for a second? All of you, because there is one thing that you need. Only one thing that you need, and that is Jesus. With Jesus, you have eternity with Him in glory forever. No more sorrow, no more pain. Without Jesus, you will burn in hell, separated from God forever. We did a whole series about that called Burn. That's all you need. And if you die tomorrow, or if you slip on our parking lot this afternoon on your way out, break your neck, and you don't have Jesus, you've got no hope. And if all you have is Jesus, that's a wonderful eternity. Because God is interested in the eternal things, the things that matter, and not what I need and what I should have. In Philippians chapter 4, Paul says this to the church in Philippi. He says, and this same God who takes care of me will supply some of your needs as long as you work hard enough to get the rest of them. No, he says, this same God will supply all your needs from His glorious riches. Like, you think you can imagine big? Paul's like, oh, God's got you way beat. We're so interested in me, like, I want to beat them in my little speedboat. And God's like, dude, I got a massive cruise ship that can take you out in an instant. We're like, I want a speedboat. Like, God will supply all your needs from His glorious riches. And of course, your needs are different than your wants. Your needs are different than what you think you need. We think we need more. We think we need something else. And God says, no, I'll give you all that you need. And if you probably know this verse, even if you've never gone to church or been connected before, but in Psalm 23, verse 1, David says this, "The Lord is my shepherd." The King James says, "I shall not be in want." The NLT, a little easier to understand, says, "I have all that I need." I just want you to know, that's verse 1 of Psalm 23. What that means is that there is no verse 0.5 or 0.25. There is no part A before this. He doesn't say, "I've got a nice house, I've got a great family, I've got a car, and the Lord is my shepherd, so I've got all that I need." He says, "The Lord is my shepherd, therefore I have all that I need." All we need is Jesus. And we're so focused on all these other things that we think we need that we don't. We assume that we need more, bigger, better, 2.0. What's the next thing? And it's not just us. Like, what's being sold to us? It's being promoted to us. We're being obsoleted into some of these things. Oh, you have that version? Well, in a couple more weeks, that's not going to work anymore, so you'll have to get the new one. So, they know what they're doing. But we don't need those things. We think the grass is always greener on the other side. You might say things, I'll be happier if. Meaning, there's something else that I need. I'll be happier if I have that. I'll be happier if this thing happens to me. Just one more thing, then it'll be good. Just one more whatever, then it'll be good. Or I deserve better, whatever. What's the I deserve better for you? Oh, I deserve better. And that's all things that focus on what we think we need, but not really what we need. Other things we say is, well, this next one will be. I know that didn't work out so well, but this next time, oh, it's going to be great. It'll be perfect. Everything will be better then. Or the kind of the flip side of that, what will I do if I don't have this? And maybe that goes back to the first thing we talked about. What about if I'm happy? I need to be happy. I need to have things. And I'm sure you guys have heard this so many times probably. But if the grass is always greener on the other side, it's time to water your own lawn. And that's the truth. Like, we look and say, oh, what about them? We're on our steeple going, I got to get ahead of them. And God's like, just water your own lawn and it'll be green and look pretty good. Stay focused on what you've got here. Take the tour boat, look around. Do you have Jesus? Then you have everything that you need. Do you have me? Because I'm offering myself to you. Then you've got all that you need. And Joseph could have been like, oh man, my brothers, they're not in a pit. My brothers, they're not in prison. My brothers, they're not slaves. And at the very end of Genesis chapter 50, one of the last verses of Genesis, is Jacob dies. Joseph and the brothers' dad, he dies. And his brothers basically come trembling to him going, what are you going to do to us now? Now that dad's gone, I'm sure you're going to kill us because of what we did to you. And what is Joseph's response? Joseph said, well, you intended to harm me, but God intended it for good. Because God is good. So don't get caught up in what seems good. Don't be misled by what seems good. Don't misinterpret when is the right time. And don't misunderstand what we need. This is how we get tripped up. This is how we end up on the speedboat, comparing ourselves to all those around us. Or to whatever's on that TV or that website telling us that we need to have or we need to be. But in reality, we just need to sit down, take a casual ride on the tour boat and say, God, thank you for that. Thank you for that. Thank you for you. And you know what? God, you are my shepherd, so I've got all that I need. That's all we need. The Sanhedrin in us fails to see God's provision. And so where are you? What is the Sanhedrin in you saying? What are you saying to God? Oh, God, that's not good enough. Okay? God, you're not good enough. Is that how it's coming across to him? So don't be caught up in the speedboat. Just be a tour boat. And don't be like the Sanhedrin, but instead look at what God has done for you. Look what God has done for your life, all around you, the things that you have, and ultimately the fact that Jesus has offered himself to you, that God has offered his Son for you on a cross. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for what you have offered us. Thank you for offering Jesus to us. And thank you, it doesn't mean it's easy to say, God, but thank you that we can confidently say that the Lord is my shepherd. I have everything I need. God, I pray that you would help us to have that tour boat mentality, that mentality that sees things from an eternal, spiritual perspective and not from our right now, in the moment, what we don't have, how we're not as good as those other people. Help us to see that we have you and that's enough. Help us to find our contentment in you and to give you the honor and glory for what you've done. We thank you that we have seen you move mountains. We have seen you do great things. And we can trust you for the next thing as well. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.